Good evening. This is a presentation of Movement Radio. Welcome to another edition of The Hauntings of. And now, here are your hosts, Chip Hazard and Talon Williams.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of The Hauntings of right here on Movement Radio. I am Talon Williams alongside Chip Hazard, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Hauntings of Minnesota. Chip, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, obviously, we're going to be talking about the state of Minnesota. And, you know, at first, it doesn't seem like a dark or scary place. But once you dig into it just a little bit, the North Star State uncovers gruesome murdered gangsters, some tragic suicides, and the souls of murderers out for vengeance even after they've died.
So
we're gonna jump right on into it. We're gonna get just a little closer look at these haunted places in Minnesota. Talon, you got the first one?
I do have the first one, my brother, and we are going to be looking at Washington State Bridge, and this is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, Washington State Bridge was built in the latter half of the 1960s, and this is spanning over the Mississippi River, connecting the East and the West Bank campuses of the University of Minnesota. Now, the bridge has two decks, a bottom for vehicles and a top for pedestrians and cyclists.
Okay, that's
actually pretty cool architecture if you think about it, because we over here in Chattanooga, we have four bridges that go across the Tennessee River going from downtown to the North Shore. You got the Old Jotty Bridge, which is basically I-27. You got Market Street Bridge, which is the real cool one that's got the big metal blue truss, you know. And then there's the Walnut Street Bridge, which is the actual walking pedestrian bridge. And then you got Veterans Bridge. So that's basically like taking the Walnut Street Bridge and putting it on top of Market Street, basically. That's some pretty cool architecture, I think. I'd like to see something like that, like up close and personal. However, the bridge is something of a hot spot for, unfortunately, suicides, and is now said to be one of the most haunted places, and is now said to be haunted by the spirit of those who have jumped to their deaths, including a professor at the university by the name of John Berriman, who committed suicide back in 1972. Students crossing the bridge say they often hear phantom footsteps at night, and they feel as though someone is watching them from the shadows. And anytime you ever go somewhere where you know someone has died, you know, whether it be a bridge, a hospital, a funeral home, a gravesite, or where you know the presence of a dead body or dead entities could possibly be there, it's always a weird, chilling feeling, you know. Especially with bridges, you know, because bridges, for the most part, people have been known, you know, to commit suicide from different bridges. In fact, I think there was a documentary, and hopefully we'll talk about this documentary in a later episode of Movement Radio, because like we say, we talk back and forth in our Facebook groups about the most controversial documentaries, and the reason why I bring that up is because one of the controversial documentaries that I'd like for us to get into is a documentary called The Bridge. And basically, it started off, this director started off filming stuff at the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. Basically, it started off as architecture, the way it was built, and things like that, until he actually filmed somebody committing suicide.
Oh, wow.
And during the process of the filming, he ended up filming like 24 suicide jumps that took place at the Golden Gate Bridge, and 23 of the 24 people sadly lost their lives. So you think about that, one that survived. So basically, one out of every 24 people who jumped from the Golden Gate Bridge lived. I mean, even then, that's a horrible statistic. You don't want to, you know, take the chance on.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, anytime you go anywhere where you know someone has died, there is always that feeling of dread, that feeling of uneasiness, that feeling of something could be watching me right now. You know, like anybody who's ever had an experience would probably feel that way as well.
I think so. You know, you get that feeling a lot when you're in certain wings of the hospital. You know, you're walking down the hall or whatnot, going to a room or leaving a room, and you just get this kind of this unease, this like eerie cold feeling that runs across you. You know, a lot of people might toss that up as, oh, well, that's just because they keep the hospital so cold to keep, you know, germs and everything down.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does happen quite a bit.
Yeah. And I mean, if we're going to go by that logic, then you would probably say that the hotbed for any hospital who could possibly would be the hospice ward. You know, people in hospice who are very much at the tail end of their lives. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, which of course, you know, I've said it time and time again, I'm a believer in angels and demons. And maybe the presence of said angel or demon could be there potentially to maybe welcome someone into the afterlife in some respects. So maybe that's sometimes the feeling that you get as well. You know, you feel it a lot in hospitals, especially. Maybe not so much, which I do feel. I think you feel more of a presence of angels when you go to funeral homes, because, you know, the Bible does say, you know, in Matthew 5:4, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Then maybe that's, you know, because there's always a very, there's an unsettling feeling at funeral homes, and there's a sadness, but at the same time, there's also a comfort factor because there's so many people around you trying to make you feel better, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Even then, during at a funeral, you know, it's still a sad event, you know, but there's always people there, always, you know, because when you go outside in the area, people are laughing and joking and cutting up with each other, trying to make each other like, hey, you know, we need to stay together. We need to still, you know, you don't talk to me that much anymore. You know what I'm saying? So bringing everybody together, you know, unfortunately, sad things like that have to happen in order for
exactly,
you know. So anyway, we're going to get emotional on this episode, so let's just keep it moving. What you got the next one?
Yeah, next up, we're going to talk about the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Sounds good.
Now, the Fitzgerald Theater has long been considered one of the most haunted places in the state. There is a number of unexplained phenomena that have been reported here, but most of them are pinned on a former stagehand known only as Ben. All right. Yeah, so it is believed that Ben died in the theater sometime in the 1940s. However, he seems to be continuing to hang around ever since his death. His shadow has often been spotted moving up in the workings of the stage, and cold spots are felt near an old entrance which has been boarded up for years. Now, as you know, the skeptic that I am, cold spots near an entrance could be just a draft. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, and I know that cold spots are supposed to be a good indicator of a being, a paranormal being. But, I mean, when you specifically say that it's near an entrance that's been boarded up, chances are that that entrance probably has a draft of some sort.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Now the next part is pretty interesting, because it says staff often say they can hear Ben dropping his empty beer bottles, and that he's considered pretty harmless for the most part. But on one occasion, he almost killed two workers when he dropped a massive chunk of plaster on them from an overhead catwalk. Thankfully, they both managed to jump out of the way at the very last minute.
So was this a drunk prank by a drunken ghost? Hey, watch out, fellas. Boing!
it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Now, I have two questions here.
Okay.
First, how do they know that it's empty beer bottles that Ben is dropping?
Right. I mean, do they hear the noise, walk over to it, and see the empty beer bottle possibly? Who knows?
That's my question. Like, how do you know? If it's nothing there, you just hear this bing kind of noise, you know?
Right.
You know it's a beer bottle, because I mean, in the 40s, Coca-Cola came in a glass bottle,
right?
You know. And then secondly, the chunk of plaster, how do we know that that's just not been kind of, you know, deteriorating overhead and they didn't notice it, and then that was the first piece that kind of fell, and you know, they obviously, you got to fix the roof now, but I mean,
would it be made out of plaster though, or would it be more of like concrete or some type of harder material?
I would say it's plaster, you know, kind of like what you had, like the Tivoli, you know, their ceiling is, it's plaster.
Yeah, I didn't even think of the Tivoli having a plaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be that see, that's logical. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, see, I throw the logic into it.
Right? I'm a believer. Anyway, okay, so I'm sorry. All right. This thing's making some weird ass noise for whatever reason. Anyway, all right. Not the computer or the microphone. The refrigerator was making some weird ass noise. But anyway,
you're good.
All right. So yeah, that one was interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, is the Fitzgerald Theater still open to this day? Do you know if that's you know, if they're still open?
I think it is. Give me just 2 seconds here.
As you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, this is Movement Radio. We're kind of ill-equipped to deal with the possibility of asking questions off the top of our heads. Oh, it happens so often.
Actually, yes, the Fitzgerald Theater is still in use to this day.
Is it for like Broadway style musicals? Is it like an actual theater where they play movies, concert hall, things like that?
It looks like it's Broadway style. So they've got like Dog Man the musical. They have a series called they have a series called An Evening With. Where they have different, they have an evening with like Emily King, Steel Drivers, Gaelic Storm. They've got the Crash Test Dummies coming, Gregory Porter's coming. So I would say it's very much like the Tivoli that's here in town.
Yeah, because the Tivoli does a lot of evening withs also. I think they did one with Kevin Smith a couple of years ago. They did one with Gregory Hines, I believe. No, not Gregory Hines. I'm going to think Gregory Hines. Gregory Hines has been dead for almost 20 years. Somebody named Hines. No, Hines. It wasn't Hines. No, I don't know. Anyway, it was somebody named Gregory. I can't remember who it was. Hell, probably a damn politician wanting to rip him off. But anyway, we're going to continue on with the next one then after this. All right. So the next one we're going to talk about is the Warden House, or the Warden's House in Stillwater, Minnesota. Now, over the years, there have been 13 different wardens from the Stillwater State Prison who have occupied this house. However, the one resident who seems to have decided to stick around is Warden Henry Wolford's daughter. Now, the story goes that Gertrude, the daughter, had just given birth to a son when she died suddenly of appendicitis. Now, again, this is back in the early 1900s, so appendectomies, especially emergency appendectomies, weren't even a thing yet.
Exactly.
The little boy was sent to live with the warden up until Wolford moved out of the home in 1914. It seems that Gertrude may have gone with her son to his grandfather's house, but she did not leave when he did. In fact, from 1914 to this present day, there has been a presence reported of a woman wandering the rooms of the home in search of her infant son. Sometimes she is seen looking out the window, and at other times a cradle in the upstairs bedroom rocks on its own. Now here's the thing. If a warden, let's just say the brand new warden moves in, and if I'm a warden of this prison and I walk into this room and the damn cradle's rocking back and forth by itself with nobody in it, nobody pushing it, I don't want to be the warden anymore. Yeah, fuck this house and fuck this prison. I'm done. I ain't going back in.
Yeah, I don't think I don't even want to be there.
Right. I mean, but there's also, I mean, but this one's also tragic in a sense because, you know, the young boy, you know, lost his mother in childbirth, you know. So automatically, you know, the boy will wonder, well, was it growing up? I don't know if the boy will wonder, you know, was like, well, was it my fault that she died? Am I the reason my mother's dead? You know, and how would he, you know, be able to live, you know, believing those things, you know. But also, you know, maybe he would know, he wanted to know more about his mother, you know, what was his mother like, things like that. Because that would probably be very, very difficult for a child at such a young age to lose, you know, a parent, especially the mother, you know. That's the sad part of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. But what I was going to say, as a father, like, how do you explain to your child, like, where your, where his or her mother is? Like,
yeah, asking the question, when's mommy coming home? When can we see mommy? And it's like, oh, God, how do I answer this question? You know, because, there's love there. Hopefully that's one I won't have to answer. You know, at least, you know, not one where, when, you know, the children are still young enough to be impressionable and wonder. And, you know, because once they get to the point where they're starting to ask questions to answers that, starting to ask questions, and you don't have the answer, then what? You know, but that's when, like they say, you know, when you become a parent, there is no manual. You know, you just gotta, you learn as you go, as they say. But yeah, that's the sad part of this story. You know, and the fact that, you know, people to this present day have seen reports of the lady wandering the home looking for her son. You know, it's like, do we tell her that he's not there? Do we disturb this ghost by telling her this, or will it just piss her off and something could happen to us? You know, so you kind of don't want to go too far into it, you know. And if you think if the medical technology of today was available back in the 1910s, she could have probably still been alive to this day to, you know, possibly watch her son grow up. And, you know, eventually she would have died because this was 1914, you know, but she would have at least, you know, got to see her son live out, and his, you know, the son would have to have seen his mother live a full life or whatever, you know, and possibly been a grandmother herself. So,
but anyway, exactly.
Yeah. But this one's kind of a sad one. Again, I'm getting all the sad ones today. Let's move on. Let's go to the next one. What you got?
So next up, we're going to talk about Four Paws Restaurant, and that's going to be spelled FOREPAUGH.
Okay. Not four paws as in like paws, like a dog's paw or something. Yeah.
Right. This is in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay.
So the most prominently known ghost that resides here at Four Paws is a ghost by the name of Molly. Okay.
Okay.
Fortunately enough, she is a good ghost.
Right.
She might be a little mischievous, but she will not bring people any harm. A little bit about Molly. She was once a servant who lit up the room with her smile and her positive attitude. She was very personable and wise beyond her years. Although she was only a maid, her beauty did not go unnoticed. Her employer, Joseph Librant Forepaul, made every excuse to keep her close to him.
Mm-hmm. Boom, boom, boom. There you go.
So it has been, it was not long before his wife Mary discovered his admiration for the servant Molly.
Right.
Mary became extremely jealous over the servant and soon would assign her chores that would keep her away from the bedrooms and away from her husband Joseph.
Okay.
However, Molly turned out to be carrying Joseph's child, and that made Mary furious.
When it comes, I'm imagining these people on Maury. Like,
no, man, this ain't Maury. Damn, this is some Jerry Springer type shit right here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because of what? Yeah, the aftermath. Yeah, you're right. It's more Springer than it is Maury. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Joseph promptly ended the affair with Molly, but Molly was so distraught that she mourned and cried herself into a stupor, and she eventually went to the third floor of the mansion and committed suicide by tying a rope around her neck and jumping out of the third floor window. She died instantly.
Yeah, which basically means that when she jumped, she snapped her neck. Basically, yeah, because I mean, that's normally the way that they do it, like especially in the old Wild Wild West days when they would have the hanging gallows, when they had the gallows up and they would hang someone for crimes or whatever. Normally they would release the trap door up underneath, and with the amount of force, depending on how heavy the person was depending on how high the gallows was. And if the rope, if you went, and as soon as you went, if the noose doesn't snap your neck immediately, you basically suffer for the next 2 or 3 minutes as you die, basically, you know, which kind of horrific. I don't know if right. I mean, if you want to go, you want to go quick, you know. I don't want to suffer, like, make me go quick, you know. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the movie The Omen, you know, when she's like, I'm doing this for you, Damien, like, you know, how that crazy, like, that's what I think right? when you describe that, that's the first thing I thought of was The Omen. But anyway, all right, go ahead and continue.
So now, Joseph was so distraught when he heard the news, he decided he could not stay in the house anymore where his beloved had died, right? So one day, he went for a walk. Yep, one day he went for a walk, and in his breast pocket, he hid his pistol. When he got to a remote area where nobody was around, he took the pistol out and shot himself dead.
Man.
So that's two suicides almost like in one place, right? So
right.
Today,
in one story, yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so today the mansion has been turned into a restaurant, and Patreons have can attest to the paranormal activity there. Excuse me. Visitors are sometimes treated to the sudden appearance of Molly. She especially loves to visit new brides, as she is reported to have always dreamed of being the ball of the wedding. You know, as any young girl would, you know, they want to, you know, be this.
This is my day.
Yes. So unfortunately, no one has ever told her that she's already dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you imagine some guy at the bar looking like, hey, look at this nice girl over here, I'm gonna go talk to her. And then motherfucker stumbles over there, gets to the bar, she's gone like, well, where that girl at that was just here? Like, she disappeared. And the bartender's like, you seen Molly, didn't you? You motherfucker, you acting like you on Molly. Get your ass back down there and pay for your tab or whatever, you know.
It says that Mr. Forepaw is also sometimes seen wearing a dark waistcoat, a silk vest, some pinstripe trousers, and a derby hat. Very mafioso?
Very Al Capone-like, absolutely it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he had any ties to any kind of mob activity, but... you know, who knows? Minnesota is close to Illinois. It's close to Chicago. So why not, right?
Yep. So he can be seen going to the basement, at which time the lights flicker and shuffling noises are heard. And he roams through the house in a hurried fashion as if he's looking for somebody. And he has been caught on film many times, usually seated next to a female guest.
Even pervy in the afterlife. Look at you.
Little Playboy-esque, yes.
Maybe.
So, a little history about the Four Paws restaurant. It stands in the historic district of St. Paul, Minnesota, and looks just like it did when it was still a house before they converted it into the restaurant that it is now. It is beautifully decorated with pieces from the 19th century. Diners who enjoy good food and the Victorian era, good food and the Victorian era, go to the restaurant to enjoy good meals. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go to a restaurant, I'm going for a good meal.
Right. You don't go just for the ambiance, you know. Although in some cases, I mean, if you're on the cheat, maybe you go because you just want something in your belly, and all you got on you is like $5, you know?
Right. you know, but if I'm going to a sit down restaurant, I'm going for a good meal. I'm not going because it looks like it's in the 19th century or right. dragons laying around or stuff right. like that, you know?
Right. No, I feel you.
Yeah. So during special events, it is not unusual to see the staff wearing 19th century clothing.
Mm-hmm.
All the 7 dining rooms of the mansion are well decorated, and they all bring the past to the present in a very good way.
Yeah, so it kind of like they, kind of like how when the people do like the reenactments or Renaissance fairs and things like that, they would always play true to the character. Or even in speaking in today's terms, in terms of cosplay, you go to a Comic-Con or you go to any type of comic book convention or video game or horror movie theme, there's always going to be people dressed up in costumes, you know, kind of, you know, playing into it because it's part of it, you know, it's part of the experience. Now, unfortunately, the restaurant has been closed, and when I found out that the restaurant was closed, I immediately thought, okay, they closed due to COVID-19. That's sad. Turns out they closed almost a year before the pandemic began. So,
oh wow,
yeah, they closed. I believe it was March of night. Matter of fact, let me click on this one little article real quick that I just seen it. Yeah, March 12th, 2019. I'm sorry. And it says here that it was shut down. The news comes off the heels of the tragic death of the executive chef, 32-year-old Kyle Bell. So didn't know if maybe that had a lot, maybe his passing had a lot, but they did say that the, because of financial ruin and other things like that, that they were able to help people get other jobs and things like that. And yeah. Yeah, sadly, it says right here that he ended up dying of his battle with the flu. He was battling the flu prior before passing away.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so that's sad, man. You know, and what's really sad is that he died with his wife, and he had 2 kids, a 3-year-old and 3-month-old. So God bless his family. You know, we hope the family, you know, is okay now. I mean, it's been over a year, but that's not something you get over. You know, these 2 kids are gonna have to grow up without a father, you know, kind of like what we were talking about of the boy growing up without his mother. That's sad, man. You know, yes, pray for the Bell family.
Exactly.
Praying for the Bell family right now. Okay, I'm gonna click off of this because it's gonna make me sad. I'm gonna go back over here. It gets real on Movement Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes it just happens. Anyway, all right, so we're gonna jump on. We're gonna go to the next one. So we'll go to the next one. This one I find very, very interesting. In fact, this might be one that I might even want to make that trip to. It's in Hibbing, Minnesota, and it's the Greyhound Bus Museum. Now, you wouldn't think a place like this would be haunted, or on contrary. Now, the Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing is probably not the first place you think of when you think of haunted locations, but nevertheless, it is considered one of the most haunted places in Minnesota. Staff at the museum say that one particular scenic cruise, 4501, is home to a spirit who frequently opens and closes the windows and the doors of the bus, especially when he knows people are watching. There are also regular sightings of strange shadows fleeting around on board the 9 bus, and the voice of a little girl can be heard in the shadows between the old vehicles that are on display. Now, that's very, very specific, you know, like it's the 9 bus and it's the cruise, you know, the scenic cruise 4105. You know, is it just those 2 buses that get it, you know? But then I actually looked it up, and matter of fact, there it is again. See, yeah, Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing, Minnesota. Information that they have, I mean, it looks pretty good, and it's actually pretty cheap to go if anybody wants to go. This isn't an advertisement. We're not sponsored by Greyhound or anything like that, but give you guys some general information. Adult admission is only $5. Seniors get in for $4. Students get in for $2. Children 6 to 12 get in for $1. Family of 4 can get in for $10, and tours start at $3 a piece. So that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, that is pretty cheap. Kind of reminds me of the Andy Griffith Museum when we went. You know, you got the Andy Griffith Museum, and then the Siamese Twins Museum. They're side by side,
right?
And for I don't remember exactly what it was.
I think it was $10. You can go through both of them, I think.
Yeah. It was fairly cheap, you know, to go through both of them, and it was really, really interesting.
Very interesting. Both sides. Yeah. Of course, the Andy Griffith, because, I mean, if you're from the South, you like the Andy Griffith Show in some way, shape, or form, or you at least know of the show, and, you know, Barney was always hilarious to me, you know.
Right.
You know, it was later, especially when he played I can't remember the guy's name. I can't remember the name of the character that he played on Three's Company, but that's a different story. But it's available Monday through Saturday from 9 to 5. Sunday 1 to 5. You can, you know, open. They're open on request for special groups in the off season. They don't reserve any trip ticket reservations. They don't take trip ticket reservations, I mean. And they did slow down a little bit due to the pandemic. And if you want to, you can get a personalized commemorative brick if you choose so. Doesn't really give you a price, but that's what it says. So there you go. So there's just some information. And anybody who goes to this museum, if you live in Minnesota, if our reach goes that far, which, hell, our reach went as far as Alaska. So if our reach can go to Alaska, our reach can certainly go to Minnesota. Anybody who goes to this Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing, Minnesota, send us an email if you do have any paranormal activity or you do feel a presence. Let us know, and then we will try to read the email on the air as we discuss another episode of The Haunting. Anyway, all right. So yes. that one's interesting. Maybe not as scary, but it's definitely interesting. Chip, you got the next one?
I do. Next up, we're going to talk about First Avenue, and this is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, we're not talking about the street, but it's a music venue known as First Avenue Music Venue.
Right.
And so perhaps one of the most grisly paranormal tales comes from Minneapolis and the iconic First Avenue Music Venue. It is said that a blonde woman took her own life in the fifth stall of the ladies' bathroom by hanging herself.
Oh, wow.
Hey, how bad you got to be to hang yourself in the shitter?
Man, it's insane, dude. Insane.
Anyway, on occasion, she has shown herself to unlucky patrons who see her bloated apparition still hanging from where her makeshift noose was. However, she is not alone in the venue.
Wait. Pause. Can you imagine... Can you imagine sitting down taking a shit? You ain't even paying no bit of attention. Maybe you're on your phone taking a shit or something. You look up and you see this bloated ghost looking right at you. Would you not freak the fuck out?
Man, I don't even think I'm wiping my ass. I'm jumping up and
like, you just sat down. Maybe you don't even get it out. Well, I don't know. First you say it, then you do it. Oh, shit! And then there you go.
Right, yeah. I'm running. Gone.
How you go? How you gonna run? The ghost, the apparition is in front of you, which means it's in between you and the stall door.
Shit, I guess I'm gonna run through that motherfucker.
Okay, go ahead.
Go.
Right.
So staff have nicknamed another spirit Slippy. S-L-I-P-P-Y. Slippy.
What is a fucking clown or something?
Well, it's funny you say that, because this particular entity is said to make a balloon appear out of nowhere. Then the balloon floats up and down the staircase on its own.
What? What?
That's some Stephen King It type shit right there.
Yeah, that because, you know, it clowns can get shot real quick. You know, ka-tow. You know, like,
yeah.
No, like, I mean, you remember a couple years ago where they had clowns, like, there was that big deal about people dressing up as clowns and, like, creeping into people's yards, and this was, like, not in any way, like, Halloween related whatsoever.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, like, it was like, I don't know about you, man, but the only clown I want to mess with, like, after midnight is, like, Ronald McDonald. That's it. And that's only when I'm, like, coming back from, like, a road trip or something, you know?
Right.
They're the only ones open past, like, 12, unless you want to go to Taco Bell. And even then, they're few and far between now. But anyway, but yeah.
It really is.
No, but seriously, like, I mean, if I'm looking at a staircase and I see a balloon coming up the staircase and then see that same balloon lose its air and go right back down that staircase. I don't need to go down the staircase. I'm running away from it.
Up that staircase or down that staircase?
Nope, I don't think so.
It says there's also a great deal of other unexplained activity, including equipment malfunctions and random destruction of property.
So what would that equipment malfunction be? Like maybe like,
because the music turn on and off. Maybe you know circuit pops or something like that. Maybe.
Maybe microphones don't work. Sound checks don't go as they're supposed to.
Right.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But yeah, this dip. Do they still do show? Do they still have shows at the First Avenue Theater?
Yes, they do. A lot of them have been postponed due to COVID. I went ahead and looked that up, but it looks like they're doing some shows. Masks are required, social distancing is required, and all that good stuff.
Right. Anyone in particular? Any ones that like stand out?
Hold on, let me pull that back up.
Yeah. As we wait, we want to tell you guys really quick that we want to send a very special thank you to hauntedrooms.com for providing us with all of our information here today. If anybody wants to look into hauntedrooms.com, maybe to book a hotel or to check out any of the topics and places that we talk about, make sure you check out hauntedrooms.com. They always got a lot of cool things. We're not sponsored by them. Hopefully, one day we would like to be. So thank you, hauntedrooms.com. Here we go. Let's get back to it. Chip, did you find it?
Yep. The calendar. Let's see. You got Dogman the Musical. They also do an Evening With series there. I guess that's a Minnesota thing.
Yeah.
Band called Doomtree is going to be there quite often. It looks like a lot of local stuff.
Right.
Monster Magnet, there's one that you would know.
Yeah, man, I ain't heard Monster Magnet since they did Matt Hardy's entrance music.
Right.
Last time I heard them.
And then you've got Apocalyptica featuring Lacuna Coil.
Oh yeah, man.
There's one for you.
I ain't heard them in a long, long time too.
No, they've been kind of
low key since the whole COVID situation.
Yep. The Crash Test Dummies.
Yeah.
Gonna be there.
Yeah.
a band called Holy Fuck with what?
Holy Fuck.
That's what it says. Holy.
I'm gonna have to look him up.
Dragon Force, they've got it on tap.
Yeah, but I only really know one Dragon Force song though. That was that one you tried to beat on Guitar Hero, and that was it.
Guitar Hero song.
Yep.
Then you've got Ministry.
Hey, I mean, I dig some old Ministry, not so much new Ministry, but definitely old Ministry.
Right. Let's see what else we got. Bunch of just look like a bunch of local bands. You've heard of the band They Might Be Giants.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah, they were actually at Riverbend a couple years back.
Yep, they're doing a 290 event with them.
Okay. Yeah, I think they opened for Here Come the Mummies.
Right. Chicano Batman. There you go.
Okay, Chicano Batman.
Rage Against the Machine. I didn't know they were doing shows together yet.
I didn't think so either.
Yeah, but it's their public service announcement tour.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, that's not till July of next year. So
yeah, it's hopefully possible. Maybe they're hoping that the situation with COVID will get better.
Yeah, they're doing a two-night event there with Rage Against the Machine July 2nd and July 3rd. What else we got? Some more evenings with All right, I think I found my new favorite band name of all times here.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Say that again. What did you say?
I said King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. That sounds...
Yeah.
Damn, that's... Does it say, like, what type of music that they do, or...
No. I'm going to look it up here in a little bit when we get done recording. But...
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, play anything that they are doing. You never want to take the chance of possibly playing something and then people want copyright or whatever, you know. Listen, we're just a humble little podcast. We don't really have that big of a budget.
Right.
But anyway, all right. All right, so that being said, let's move on to the very next one.
Now let me see if I can figure out real quick what kind of music they...
Okay, you go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Let's do this real quick. I mean, the way that it sounds, I mean, it sounds very... Maybe they're psychedelic, or maybe they're more...
Yeah, it says rock band. They're an Australian rock band. They were formed in 2010. What kind of influences associated act and nobody I
you there?
Ever heard of?
Okay.
Yeah,
you kind of went quiet on me for a minute. I'm like,
I'm sorry. Yeah, I may have been talking low. That's my fault. So King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard are an Australian rock band formed in 2010. So they've only been around for about a decade. And none of the associated acts that I've ever heard of. So you got the Murlocs, Gum, Broderick Smith, Pipe Eye. They're listed as a rock band, but none of this rings a bell to me.
Are they more of a local act that only the Minnesota people would know, or?
Well, no, they're from Australia.
Oh, okay. Oh, they're Australian. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were formed in Melbourne, Australia 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. So they're probably like, maybe they sound kind of like Hands Like Houses, maybe?
Possibly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to check them out as soon as we get done with this episode. That being said, though, let's jump on to the very next one. This is the Gibbs Farmhouse, also in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm starting to see a trend here.
Looks like St. Paul's pretty, a hotbed for paranormal activity, if you will.
Absolutely. Again, the Gibbs Farmhouse, and this is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Another one of the most haunted places in Minnesota, which can be found in St. Paul, is the Gibbs Farmhouse. In 1867, a 9-year-old boy named Willie Gibbs faced a raging prairie fire that threatened to engulf the family's farmhouse. Now, the house was spared, but unfortunately, sadly enough, young Willie died due to smoke inhalation soon afterwards. However, he appears to have stuck close to his home, which is now a museum, and his spirit is every bit as boisterous as it was when he was a live 9-year-old boy. He is known to remove toys from locked display cabinets and leave them scattered across the floor for the staff to pick up. He also likes to open and close cabinet doors, and he is capable of making quite a noise rocking back and forth in the rocking chair upstairs. Some have even claimed to see his little face peering at them from the windows as they walk by.
No, fuck that.
Well, like we say, man, I mean, it's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of the episode, I can't remember what episode it was. It was earlier on in the hauntings where we talked about how they went to this one place. I think it was Taps, or it was one of the peoples from either Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters, one of them, and they actually went to the place where the child died or whatever, and they would play ball with it. Like, the ball would roll toward the person, they'd roll the ball back, and then the ball would slowly roll back towards you. It's like, guys, I'm not on a there's no right ramp here or not. Like, anytime you're dealing with, again, I've said it many times on the program, anytime you're dealing with the ghost of children, that's because they're still stuck in that 9-year old, you know, mindset. You know, they don't know any better. They're just having fun. They're still kids, you know, in some respects, you know. But yeah, even then, that's still creepy. So, because I'll ask you, how would you just imagine? Okay, you're home. Maybe the kids are staying with their grandma or something. You walk into the room, you clean the room up, looks nice. You walk to the kitchen to get you something to drink. You walk back into the bedroom, and there's toys sprawled all over the place. You're like,
man, who's fucking with me right now?
Yeah, like, Jesse, where are you, Jesse? She in the bathroom taking a shit or something. Like, you know, maybe like, quit fucking with me, Jesse. That ain't funny. And right? Then the next day, you clean up the house. Maybe Jesse went over to her mom's with the boys. You go to the kitchen to get you something else to drink. You come back in, and then the toys back on the floor again. That's when you like, Jesse, we moving. We ain't coming back to this motherfucking house because there's too many toys on the floor now.
Right. We done. We out. Pack it up. We gone.
But Chip, we've lived in this house for, I don't give a damn how long we've lived in this house. We go.
Done, son.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you got the next one.
Yes, sir. Next up, we're going to talk about the Palmer House Hotel in South Center, Minnesota.
Yeah. Looks like an old drugstore.
Yeah, it does. It's located at 500 Sinclair Lewis Avenue in South Center, Minnesota.
Okay.
So the Palmer's House is indeed one of the most haunted places in Minnesota, as they tell us about in every story.
Right.
And it has reports dating back into the 1950s. There are various unexplained things happening in the hotel, which makes for great horror stories.
Okay.
The current owner of the Palmer House is Kelly Freeze. She has owned the house for more than a decade, and she was not a believer herself until she came into possession of the house.
So she started off with kind of like your skepticism, then she walked in the house like, huh, you know, because it's always the mindset of people where it's like, you know, I kind of really don't believe, you know, you kind of really don't believe in something until you kind of experience it firsthand, you know.
Right. So it says that Kelly has since tried to note down all of the experiences that she and the guests have experienced. And one of those reports includes the sighting of a ghost of a young boy on the stairs on the way up to the second floor. And he's described as having dirty blonde hair and green eyes.
That's very specific.
Very, very specific. So many guests have reported seeing a ball bounce down the hallway and voices of young children on many occasions, and people report feeling terror in the basement. Disembodied voices and poltergeist-like activity in the bar area.
Uh-huh.
I have a red flag here.
Okay, go ahead.
Why are you in the basement of this place? Like, you know, why? What's in the basement that you need as a guest to this place? What's in the basement you need? You know?
Right. No, I feel you.
Yeah. I just don't. I'm not just randomly like, oh man, that's the basement. I need to go down there.
Right. I mean, if you're staying in a hotel, why the hell would you need to go to the basement? Like, if you work there, then yeah, I understand you going to the basement. If you're staff, or if you're housekeeping, or even managerial service, or even like a private group or whatever. But if you're just a normal patron going to, you know, stay the night, you know, for one night, why would you go anywhere other than the room that you're assigned? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, I'm just not randomly wandering around.
Right.
The hotel is also reported to house the ghosts, or the ghost of Sinclair Lewis, the famous Arthur from Minnesota. Many other guests have been heard throughout Kelly's ownership, one of which includes electrical disturbances with lights and TVs flickering on and off in guest room, which is, this is despite a whole electrical rewiring and electrical tests throughout the building.
Hey, sometimes you get them tests done on the cheap, though.
Hey, you ain't lying. So of all the rooms in the hotel, room 11 and room 17 are reportedly the most active. Okay?
Right.
A newlywed couple was staying in room 17 when one night the wife woke up suddenly to see a lanky man dressed in 1920s to 1930s clothing standing at the foot of the bed.
Slender Man? Right.
So again, I have questions.
Okay.
If you wake up
in
the middle of the night and you see a slender, lanky man standing at the foot of your bed, you going back to sleep?
Fuck y'all, I'm going back to sleep.
Done.
I'm throwing blankets, pillows. I'm like, get the fuck away from me. You know, like, that's...
Right.
How many times have we had discussions about people being at the foot of the bed, being on the edge of the bed? You know, how many times have we discussed the rake on different platforms?
Right. It's just nope. So here's one. Next story for you. Room 11 is probably the most active room in the whole hotel, okay?
Okay.
One night, a guest was sleeping with his legs out from under the sheets, and he felt someone's fingers start to stroke them.
Nope, fuck that.
It says that he jumped up to see what was causing the sensation and found that there was nothing there, yet the feeling continued.
Uh-huh. So he already moved his foot, but yet he still felt the need, or he still felt that someone was still fucking with his foot.
Right.
Mm-mm.
Hey, at that point, we might be going into Saw mode and cutting that bitch off.
Right? Some people are so ungrateful to be alive.
Right?
Anyway.
Guests staying in room 11 have also reported extreme cold spots and constant heavy feeling upon entering the room. It has been... The entire hotel has been investigated by paranormal groups and TV shows many times over the years, and every single time they have caught EVPs or electronic voice phenomena. So, not just one time here, one time there, but every single time they have found or caught EVPs.
Sorry about that. Somebody showed up at the door real quick. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. No, they brought us the damn turkey.
Hey, nice.
Hell yeah.
Free turkey.
I'm right next to the window. Oh, there's a damn untethered church or whatever. Oh, it's people delivering fucking food and stuff to the apartment complex. Sweet.
Oh, nice.
Awesome. Yeah, got some turkey, got a couple cans of corn, some beans, some stovetop, some red potatoes, some mac and cheese.
Hell yeah, we're going to do it up this year. Gonna do it up, do it big.
Well, I don't know about big, we'll definitely do it. Anyway, all right, so go ahead, continue. Read that last part again, I apologize.
Let's see. Oh, the hotel has been investigated by paranormal groups and TV shows many times, And every single time they have caught EVPs or electronic voice phenomenon.
Yeah.
So yeah. Not just one time here or one time there, but every single time that they investigate this hotel, they catch EVPs.
Yeah. And because normally, because you'll see it with a lot of other different shows. I think Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, a lot of the other ones, they will, one show will say, hey, well, we caught this. The other show, like, eh, there wasn't really that much activity. But, you know, and that's for different places. But if every single show reports EVP activity in the exact same place, there's a good chance that there's something going on there, you know.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right. Very interesting.
So,
yeah.
All right, you got the next one up.
I do got the next one. Let me go ahead and go back here. Freaking pop. Oh, no. Okay, it caught it. Yeah, motherfucker, that firewall working now. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the Wabasha. Rabasha? Oh, yeah, Rabasha. There we go. The Wabasha Street Caves. And this is also in, guess where? St. Paul, Minnesota.
Uh-oh.
So we go back to St. Paul again, this time to the Wabasha Street Caves. Now, during the Prohibition era, these caves were said to be the host of a number of famous figures such as John Dillinger and Ma Baker when they were used as speakeasies. However, not everyone left the caves alive. It is said that the caves are now haunted by the spirits of three gangsters who were murdered in the back room and buried under the concrete floors. Now, the owner has frequently encountered men dressed in 20s style attire, as well as a strange mist floating around the halls. There is also said to be a very ghostly bartender who will refill people's empty wine and whiskey glasses. Others have spotted the apparition of a madam known simply as Nina Clifford, who appears wearing a period dress.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you're talking about, because Prohibition, obviously the gangsters would run, you know, Prohibition, you know, alcohol up to the northern states and things like that. So it was very, you know, especially with speakeasies. And for people who don't, like, some to the younger audience that don't really know what a speakeasy is, a speakeasy was basically a front for a place. Like, for example, if you can see, this is, you know, John's automotive parts or whatever, you know, and that's what it said. It looks like a automotive store. But if you go into it and then you go to the back and then you hit that secret button and then you opens up a secret door, it takes you to a bar, basically. And it takes, because during Prohibition, alcohol was prohibited. There was no alcohol. You know,
right.
You had to basically get people to drive it everywhere that it needed to go. And that's basically how NASCAR started, was because the Shiners had outrun the police. So that's how pretty much how that started. That's why I now understand why NASCAR fans love their beer so much.
So,
but you would think three gangsters, this had to be a whack job, wouldn't you think?
You would think so.
You would think so. Very, very mafioso-esque. The mist, that could kind of be explained, because normally when you're talking about mist, especially with caves, you know, like, I mean, you've been to Rock City, Ruby Falls up here, there's mist everywhere. You know what I mean? So that could be just part of the rock formations and just the humidity that's inside the caves or something. Now the bartender, though, that's probably the friendliest damn ghost ever. You mean I'm sitting here with an empty wine glass? I'm not paying a bit of attention. I look over and it's like, holy shit, this glass get full all of a sudden? Man, I don't know who did it, but thank you. You look around, ain't nobody in the back bar. It's like, okay, I know I didn't imagine this. Fuck it, I'm drinking it anyway. You know, so you never turn down.
Right.
Who the hell's going to turn down free booze, you know?
Not me.
Not me either. But yeah. So that one was different. That one was very different. All right, you got the next one, Bubba?
I do. Next up, we're going to talk about the Minneapolis City Hall, obviously in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Looks very, very gothic, very cathedral looking.
Yeah.
It kind of looks more like a church than a city hall.
That's what I was thinking.
Yep.
So Minneapolis City Hall was the site of a historic execution. Okay.
Okay.
So in, In 1898, John Moshick was the last man to be hung at City Hall. His death will be remembered not just for being the last, but also because the execution was particularly brutal. Yeah, the process was bungled and Moshick took 3 whole entire minutes to die.
Yeah, so this is kind of a callback to the one we talked about earlier when the lady jumped, when Molly jumped out of the wind, the third story window, and she died instantly because her neck must have snapped. So this dude's neck probably didn't snap. Ooh, well, what if it was in a more graphic way than that? What if the rope was tied around his neck and they slowly brought him up? That's a little bit more cruel and unusual than just a simple hanging.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't go into detail, and I'm sure that we could find it. But his crime, the reason that he was hung is because he murdered a man over a very measly $14. Okay, but now, hold on.
Okay.
I say that in respect that if you do the conversion, the mathematical conversion for what $14 in 1898 would be worth in 2020,
right?
It would be that $14 is worth $100.
Okay.
So that's a little bit more.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, $100, even in today's standards, $100 really isn't. Well, I guess it all depends on who you ask. I mean, a homeless person sees $100, it's the luckiest day of their life. A rich person look at $100 like, give it to the poor. You know, like, I mean, so I guess it just depends on how you value the $100, I guess.
Exactly. So it is said that today, Moshick's angry spirit haunts 3 separate locations in City Hall. Okay?
Okay.
The courtroom in which he was convicted.
Okay.
The mayor's office, I guess because the mayor is the one who convicted him.
I'm going to assume so.
And the site of the actual hanging.
Hmm. So it doesn't actually say like where he was hung. Was it like maybe a gallery, a gallows area, maybe a maybe? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, surely they wouldn't do it in the middle of the courtroom. You would think.
You never know. I mean, this is the 1890s.
Right. Hell. Back then they probably still used firing squads or something back then.
Right.
Right.
So it says that Moshick has some mood swings, because he can be very harmless and is known to just rearrange pictures and appear to staff or prisoners dressed only in his undergarments.
Okay.
Yeah. But then it says that on his worst days, when he's having a bad mood swing, he can make judges and attorneys severely ill. Now, it doesn't elaborate on what kind of ill, you know, whether they get, you know, diarrhea, and maybe, you know, pooping on themselves, or, you know, they get sick at their stomach and start violently puking. But, you know,
nothing to say anything horrible or anything like that.
Right. It's just severely ill. So.
Yeah. So that's different, though, because I mean, because I know people, you know, people have uneasy feelings. I've never really heard of one that would be like a sickening feeling. You know what I mean? Because we always talk about uneasiness, but when you talk in terms of like sickening, then that's a different type of, like, that's like when they're trying to fuck with you almost. Does he whisper in the attorney's ear, like saying it's like, you know, he did it, he's guilty, or something along those lines, you know, where he tells the judge, you know, it's like, you did this to me, or something along those lines, you know, so you never really know exactly what he's thinking, you know, or what he's gonna say. But yeah, man, that one's all over $14 too. $14.
$14.
$14, man. You can get you could take a nice girl out to dinner for $14.
Well, at the Taco Bell, maybe.
Hey, food is food. Nah, take her to the Sonic. Let her get a foot long. Anyway, take that however you want to take it. Anyway. So the last one we're going to talk about today is the Gray Cloud Island. And this is in Washington County, Minnesota. So everybody brace themselves because this one's probably going to get a little bit long. Okay, so Gray Cloud Island is located in Washington County, Minnesota, and it is a very small area with an equally small local population. This tiny location draws the attention of people frequently because of the historic site found at the Gray Cloud Island. Now, there is the famous Lime Clean and the Gray Cloud Cemetery. History buffs have find the site a fascinating place to visit, as no matter how hard people try to turn the island into this thriving community, most people had no interest in living there or working on the island whatsoever. I wonder why that is. Let's continue. Another reason why is so many people venture to the area, with the estimated population of only 300 people, is because of all the stories of paranormal activity and ghost sightings. There is also a very strong connection to the Native American history at the location due to the number of Native American burial grounds that are on the island, as well as the fact that this island was an early Native American settlement. So automatically right there, Bubba, we're dealing with Indian burial grounds and things like that, disturbing people's resting places and things.
Yeah,
we talked about this several times. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this several times, but if there's one thing that I've always been taught, is you don't fuck with anybody's final resting place.
Right.
Period.
So, for many believers in the paranormal and ghosts, Gray Cloud Island is not only one of the most haunted places in Minnesota, but the argument can be made that it's one of the most haunted places in the entire state, in the entire country of the United States. Now, a little bit of brief history before we get into some of these hauntings. In the long history of Minnesota, Gray Cloud Island is an area known for Native Americans and their settlements. The area is also known for woodland mound builders, a great deal of fur traders, and the fur trade was also done on the island for many, many years. Now, the presence of Native Americans is the most significant for the area, as it was a Native American for which they got their name from. Now, and I'm going to butcher this, and ladies and gentlemen, please forgive me. A tribe of Medwa, Canton, Dakota Sioux, hopefully I got that right, lived in the area around the late 1700s to 1800s. It was from the tribe that the island eventually acquired its name. According to the reports, the chief of the Sioux had a daughter who was named Gray Cloud Woman. This was the first Gray Cloud Woman, and she went on to marry James Aird, who was a fur trader. They went on to have a daughter named Margaret, who was also known by her Indian name, Gray Cloud Woman too. A man by the name of Hazen Moores went on to marry Margaret, or the second Gray Cloud Woman, and it was this Gray Cloud Woman who the island was named after. So, many attempts were made to try to build a strong and successful settlement on the island, but all of the attempts failed completely miserably. There are a few homes on the island, but according to reports, Gray Cloud Township offers those that live there no school, no libraries, no firehouses, no police stations, no churches, and no bars. Why the fuck would you want to live in this place?
doesn't sound like anywhere I want
to
live.
It doesn't. You mean I can't even go to church? I can't even worship? I can't go to the bar? I can't get a drink? If someone breaks in my house, I can't call the popo? Come on now. And no school, how am I going to get my education? Anyway. So, no books, can't read. You know, my house catches on fire.
Shit.
Get a bucket. Anyway. So, the island does boast about the Gray Cloud Lime Clean. Klein. Clean Klein. It's K-I-L-N. I want to say it's clean, but I'm probably butchering that too. As well as the Great Cloud Cemetery and a large concentration of Native American burial grounds. The Great Cloud Lime Clean was built roughly around 1846. The clean stood 35 feet tall and was roughly 20 feet around. It was built to create quicklime. Now, quicklime was used for fertilizer and also mortar. It was considered to be a defining structure during the early ages of the industrial era. So I learned something today. Quicklime. It could be used for other different things.
Exactly.
So along the Mississippi River in southwest Washington County, Minnesota, is the Gray Cloud Island Cemetery. The earliest marker and verified burial in this area belongs to a baby by the name of McCoy. It dates all the way back to 1873. There are countless stories of paranormal activity in this cemetery. As a direct result of all the ghostly stories, the cemetery is locked and no one is permitted on the premises after sunset. Furthermore, only people living in the local area or people who have direct relatives that are buried in that cemetery are allowed to go to the cemetery, but even then they have to go with strict guidelines, you know, accordingly. And yeah, that's that, you know, I gotta have restrictions to go see my loved one that's buried in this cemetery? Really?
Yeah, fuck, you know? That.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about all the messed up stuff, let's talk about the haunted stuff, which is equally as messed up. So the reports, this is gonna get funny. I'm sorry. Okay, so the reports of ghostly sightings and paranormal activity are so extensive at Gray Cloud Island that it is difficult to determine which of these stories are actual fact or if they're creations of urban legend. So it's kind of one of those, is it real, is it not real, you be the judge kind of thing. With so many stories and reports made about the island, it is, at what we talked about earlier, considered one of the most haunted places in the state of Minnesota, if not the entire country of the United States. One of the most popular reports of paranormal activity is that of the Green Lantern. Like
Hal Jordan?
Jonathan Stewart? Who are we talking about here?
I don't know.
So anyway, that's one of the most popular stories in paranormal activity, is the Green Lantern. Now, it's based on different stories. There are those that say a former Indian chief wanders around the cemetery carrying the Green Lantern. There are other reports that say that he wanders around the cemetery just by himself without the lantern. Further stories claim that they see the Green Lantern, but no one's carrying the Green Lantern. The unusual green light simply appears to move throughout the whole cemetery grounds, the woods, and along the local roads. Some people have claimed to see the greenish light in the form of an orb or a cloud. Other people state that they have seen regular orbs around the cemetery and the surrounding area. There are also a number of reports that the Gray Cloud Woman II wanders around the Gray Cloud Island, despite the fact that she was buried on a Sioux reservation with her mother, the original Gray Cloud Woman. So she's not even buried in this cemetery. But,
okay.
Yeah, so if you're not even, I can understand if you were haunting the cemetery where you're buried, but the cemetery you're not even buried at, or maybe those where, again, ghosts tend to go to where they feel the most at home, so maybe that's where they felt the most at home. Now, since the area was, or has, a great, you know, many Native American burial grounds, there are those that claim activity on the island is relative to the spirits of the deceased. On nights with a full moon, people have stated that they have heard the sounds of drums beating, which is a very common thing when, especially with Indian burial grounds, you hear the war drums a lot of times.
Right.
Hearing the howling of coyotes at night or their barking is also something many people swear to have heard while they're on the island. People who have visited the island also claim that the air is very heavy and very thick, making it very difficult to breathe. This particular claim is one that other people dispute, as they have never experienced anything like it. Now, being up in the north, I'm gonna assume that, you know, it's harder to breathe when you're like higher above the sea level, you know what I mean? Because even when you go to Denver, they say it's very, the air is very thin up there, so it's very difficult. You know, you have to, you know, control your breathing differently because you're a mile above sea level. So this one, maybe not so much. That one you'd have to look into a little bit. Now, a rather unusual bit of activity that numerous people have claimed to experience is that of a white truck that appears to chase people on the island. Some say that the truck appears and vanishes without a trace. Others claim that the truck has no driver. Those that have encountered the truck are adamant that, those who have encountered the truck are adamant it is not made up. There are also reports of a ghostly apparition on a motorcycle that follows people and can vanish into thin air. Some people dispute that story of the pickup truck, stating that if there was a truck, most of the locals or all the locals don't own a truck, and that they would have chased off the nosy trespasser. So you see a white truck running around, you ain't gonna say shit to nobody. Well, there's no police, so obviously they can't get in trouble. So, I mean, what are you gonna do with that? Hell, it's anarchy up there. Jesus. Anyway, so this one's gonna freak you out a little bit. When it comes to a lot of paranormal activity reports, there are a lot of connection to the cemetery and the gravestones in general. There is one report that within the cemetery sits a row of 12 tombstones that belong to a group of nuns. People claim you can walk and count 12 headstones. However, if you turn around and recount the same stones, you will see that the number is not 12 the second time you count. One group of people interested in the haunting claim actually went to the cemetery. A mother who had taken her son with her was in this group. The mother stated that while she watched her son walk down to count the tombstones, there was a ghostly figure of a young boy following her son. They immediately left the cemetery in a panic. Well, no shit! You see a fucking... If I see, you know, a ghostly child following my kid, like, nothing, we gotta go. Fuck this shit. This is scary enough as it is. Hell no, I don't think so.
Right?
So anyway, the stories of unusual activity are very much abroad, especially in the cemetery. There are reports that people can hear disembodied voices, while other people claim to hear horrific screams of a woman. Other reports a paranormal enthusiast claim is a man wearing a red flannel jacket and an orange hat while smoking a cigarette and carrying a rifle. Nope, doesn't sound scary whatsoever.
Kind of like Elmer Fudd?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Is this Elmer? Hell, I'm pretty sure there's people in Mississippi right now thinking, well, hell, that's a normal occurrence. That ain't scary at all.
Right?
Anyway, not to upset any of our good fans from Mississippi. We love you guys. We're actually going to be talking about you guys on the next episode of The Hauntings. But anyway, the site would not have caused any issue with those who have seen the man, but they say that the man is translucent, means that you can see through him. One woman who saw the man in the red flannel jacket stated that although he never uttered a single word, he just stared at her, and she felt a very uneasy feeling when she looked at him and left the area immediately. According to her reports, the man appeared right behind her in the road, and shortly thereafter, she kept seeing him in the back seat when she looked through the rearview mirror.
That's creepy as fuck. Nope, fuck that.
Could you imagine you driving, you ain't thinking about nothing, and you look in the back seat, and there's this Braun Strowman looking motherfucker holding a rifle and a fucking orange hat. Like, nope. Fuck that shit, I'm out. Now, one small group of friends who went to see if they could actually see the man in the red flannel never saw him. However, when leaving the island, they heard the sound of a young girl whispering on the side of the road, whispering to them, "Don't come back." But there was nobody in sight. That's creepy. Yeah.
You know what? You ain't got to tell me twice.
Nope. You're not coming back. Not never. So, there are many accounts of people driving past the cemetery or around the island, and there is an overall feeling of uneasiness and fear that creeps into people. Some people have reported that when they are driven onto the island and gone past the cemetery, that their car will lose all power. Terrified due to the sound of a woman screaming and overall creeped out feeling, the owner of the vehicle managed to get to push the car out of the gates of the cemetery. And as soon as the car got out of the cemetery gates, it immediately started right back up and the radio started blaring and the lights came on. The driver and his passengers immediately left the island for fear of what could have happened had they had stayed.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell else are you supposed to do?
Right. Now, countless haunted stories continue to be told by the Great Cloud Island locals. Locals would prefer if most people simply, you know, just didn't visit the island as they claimed, because there is no unusual activity there. So basically, the locals are saying all you people who are coming in are just making up stories. Other ghost hunters claim that there are plenty of unusual activity in the form of orbs, screams, odd feelings, and sightings of everything from a long deceased Native American to the ghost of a woman who appears in mourning of missing her lost child. Yeah, perhaps, here's something, perhaps strangest of all the rumors about why the residents are so protective of the island, this one's kind of creeps into a little bit of some crazy shit, is that some say that there is a church group on the island, which is similar to a cult, and is also even a secret KKK camp.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that one's, I don't know about that one. That's a little bit too long. That'd be freaking, which I mean, going back and thinking about it, the guy with the flannel and the rifle kind of makes a little bit more sense if you think about it. But how, yeah. But how would that explain, you know, the Native American part of it, you know? Like, how would that, you know, change anything, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that one's interesting. After reading all of that, Chip, out of all the ones that we've discussed today, which is the one that interests you the most? That was the most, that you found the most interesting.
First of all, fuck that island.
Yes, fuck that island, absolutely. We're going to get a t-shirt made that says, fuck that island.
Right? I'm gonna create it right now.
Right? Like a desert island with like a fucking coconut tree and a pine tree, and just you and me on the damn island with our hands up in the air, like, what the fuck, you know? And then behind the tree is like a ghost or something holding the fucking axe or something. I don't know. I'm too elaborate with some of this shit.
But I was, I was interested in that, although I'm really interested in like the theaters anyway. Right. And then the damn Greyhound bus.
Yes. Gimmick. Yes. Yeah, those are all of mine too as well. The story of the restaurant in St. Paul, also the Four Paws. That one was more of a story of like tragedy, you know, in the sense of, you know, in the sense of tragedy, not necessarily in the sense of people being scared.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, which, you know, I wouldn't mind checking out the First Avenue music venue. That sounds like a nice place to go, especially if Rage is going to be there, you know. It's going to be interesting. But yeah,
we can save up our money and go in July.
There you go.
As long as you know, COVID is gone.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, you know what, knock on wood, God's plan. But anyway, thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of The Hauntings of man, we got Mississippi next. It's going to be a pretty cool one, good one. Again, shout out to everybody who's been sharing the comments and, you know, sharing the stuff everywhere. I told him I'd do this, so I got to do it one more time. Shout out to my boy Reese. He's going to be participating in a battle rap this upcoming December 12th, Saturday, December 12th, off of Wilcox Boulevard. All the information from it is going to be on the Movement Radio Facebook page. Also, speaking of Facebook, go check out Movement Radio Fans. It's a brand new group that we started, and we're still sending out invites and stuff. Unfortunately, Facebook only allows us to send a certain number of invites a day, which I think is kind of crap, but you know what? Whatever it is, what it is.
Right.
Chip, anything? You want to tell anybody anything about what's coming down the pipe?
Man, we just got a lot of stuff coming down the pipe. I know we say that all the time, but we're really, really ramping up on some content that we're fixing to get out for you guys. Hopefully that this episode sounds a little better to you. We're trying a new recording process some friends of ours, I reached out to them because they do a podcast and they gave us this idea to go about. So hopefully this episode sounds a little better to you guys. You know, we're always trying to upgrade the quality of what we're doing for you guys. Absolutely. We're going to start with some video stuff soon. We're working on a Patreon page where you'll be able to subscribe. We're working on the tier levels for that. I know at one tier you're going to get like some free exclusive Patreon merch that you can't even get on our actual store. You will only be able to get this through Patreon. So it's going to be really cool. Get that fire coming out, I'm telling you.
Yes, sir. It's gonna be dead fire, man. It's gonna be great. But yeah, also, hey, storefrontier.com/movementradio is where you can pick up a lot of our merch. Podpage.com/movementradio is where you can see us on the official website, and you guys can leave comments, check out the archives and different episodes, or maybe episodes that you missed from the past if you want to catch up with a lot of the other episodes that we're doing. Yeah, we got a lot of cool things going down. Again, we definitely be involved. Battle Topics is still going to happen. I know we've been talking about it a lot. Battle Topics will happen. We're actually contemplating, because we are going to go see the Battle Rap Contest, Undisputed 3. It's going to be going down December 12th. We might even do our first episode from the venue, depending on what guests we can get on and things like that. So that's definitely something that we want to look forward to.
Right, yeah, we may be able to do... maybe some interviews of, you know, some of the battlers, something, you know, maybe, you know, try. We can definitely try. I'm not gonna promise, you know, maybe they won't give us no press pass or anything.
Nah, I doubt that. I'll be lucky if I get close enough to the stage. Who knows? You know what I'm saying? But anyway, thank you guys so much. Also, gotta give a shout out to everybody. Shout out to Jaden Newman, How You Take Your Wrestling, Gunner Miller with Chat with Gunner, all of our good friends over there at the Turn the Buckle Podcast, Seeking Human Victims with Dan Wilson, our good friends Jerry and Jennifer over there at the Chronic Conversations Podcast. They just had our buddy Bryant Smith on there, stand-up comedian, wrestling manager aficionado. I still got that picture of him, because, you know, we hit him with the death stroke and then his wig flew all the way up into the air, and then I put the damn afro wig on and took that picture. Now I still got that picture somewhere. I gotta get it posted up to the website. I thought it was pretty funny. But yeah, man, and also working on a couple of guests for an evening with. I've already spoke to two other people about coming on to being guests, and we just got to figure out a date for them. Our buddy AC Hutchison is one of them. Still haven't heard back from the other one, but we will definitely keep you guys updated on that. A lot of cool things, man, going on, and I know we say this every single week, but I feel obligated to, because without you guys, we really would not be where we are right now. So we thank you guys so much, man. We love you guys. We appreciate it. Check out everything that we got going on right now, and hopefully we get some events coming up soon. Hopefully, you know, we pray that this COVID situation, you know, dies down, and that way we can actually go do some conventions and go out and meet some of you guys and shake hands and hug and all that, take pictures and stuff like that. I think it would be pretty cool just to see you guys, you know, our fan base. You know, we're already up to close to 8,500 downloads right now, and you know, hey, real quick, Chip, before we get out of here, what does the poll look like for the next Rock Retrospective?
Oh, yes. I just had that pulled up and was looking at it, and I meant to say something. Results real quick. Oh, wow. so as of 4:55 p.m. on Sunday, November the 22nd, the votes are once again tied.
What?
50% for Limp Bizkit, 50% for Korn.
Which means 0% for Nickelback.
0%. 1% for Nickelback.
We got to find some random-ass band to put with Nickelback just to see if anybody would vote for this random-ass band or Nickelback just to see what happened.
You know what? I think they would vote for the random-ass band.
I think they would, too. Okay, fucking next poll, steam-powered giraffe against Nickelback.
Nope. The next poll is going to be Nickelback versus King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Let's listen to them before we actually do that poll. All right. But yeah,
obviously. I would vote for them just by the name.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, absolutely. And y'all keep on supporting Chip with his Mission 22 project that he's doing. Still doing them push-ups and stuff. And also go to his page to find out how to donate. Shout out to our good friend Sean Thompson over at Thompson Personal Training. He's going to be kicking my ass on Monday. So I'm looking forward to that. Getting ready for that comeback. Getting ready to do what I got to do. And hopefully, you know, the first bump's going to hurt like a motherfucker. But anyway, that's the point. If you sign up for 3 months, you can get the fourth month absolutely free. Just make sure that you tell them that Movement Radio sent you, and you guys will be eligible for that deal. So, again, thank you guys so much. We love you guys, and we'll see you guys this upcoming Thursday on the Are You Ready for Some Football? Week 12. Should be pretty interesting. Chip, let's hit him with the outro.
With that being said, please do not leave without leaving a like, comment, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Make sure you check out all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Make sure you go to our YouTube channel, subscribe, and click that bell to get notified of our latest videos.
I am Chip Hazard.
I am Talon Williams.
And this is Movement Radio.
We out.
This is Movement Radio.